Hi, and welcome to the About Her show. I am Sangeeta Relan, an educationist, a writer, and a lifelong learner. I also run an e-magazine for women. This podcast is about trailblazing women and their journeys. Women who have broken many a barrier, many a stereotype to realize their potential. If they can do it, so can you. The society may attempt to influence the way we live our lives, but ultimately, it is the environment at home that plays a crucial role in shaping our future. If our home environment is open and liberal, then nothing can stop us from pursuing our dreams and passions. Our guest this week, Reshma Chordia, echoes these sentiments. Although she was raised in a small city with limited exposure to the outside world, her parents always gave her the freedom to make her own decisions. The liberal and culturally diverse environment allowed her to explore her interests and pursue her passions. This led her to discover the world of art and artists, which she fell in love with. Let's talk to her and find out how parents can break conventions to do what's best for their children, leading them to live happy and fulfilling lives. Hi, Reshma, and welcome to the About Her show. Now, this is all about getting women achievers, who we call women trailblazers, to come and share the journey of their lives with us, to tell us about, you know, the challenges, the ups and downs, successes, accomplishments that they may have, you know, achieved or gotten along the way. And this not only gives them a platform to talk about their journey and about their work, but it is also a way to inspire listeners, you know, women who are listening in and who have aspirations, who want to do something, but are just not able to, you know, just kind of get over whatever is holding them back. So we want to inspire and motivate them. And ultimately, we want to build a community of women who are there to help, support, empower each other. So welcome to the show and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I think it's a complete honor to be a part of your podcast.
Well, I'm so glad you say that, you feel like that. Okay, so let's then dive in and tell us a little bit about your childhood, early life, and how you think those experiences, you know, shaped your personality or made you the kind of person that you are today.
Sure. So I was born and brought up in a very small town, Agra.
Okay.
As we all know, the city of Taj.
Yeah.
Though my parents hail from Rajasthan. So my father is from Udaipur and my mother comes from Ajmer. It so happened that my dad at that time was working in Agra. So we were all, I'm the youngest of three girls. Okay. And all three of us were born and brought up in Agra. Our house was full of literary and cultural influences, if I may say so, all through my growing up and formative years. My grandfather, who was attached to the court in Mewar, and I'm talking almost of about a century back or maybe even more,
okay.
He was exposed to, you know, the finest things of life. It translated to a lot of prose and poetry for him in his own life. So I'm kind of trying to trace back to our upbringing and the influences that we had, we were surrounded with when we were growing up in terms of how our parents brought us up. Because I think my grandparents and my grandfather was way ahead of his time. As I'm saying, we're talking of almost 80, 90 years ago. And they were in Udaipur. And my grandfather indulged in a lot of prose, poetry. I think art for him translated like that in his life. He was a reader at the then Morris College in Nagpur. I don't know what it's called now.
Okay.
And he was the head of the Department for English Literature.
Okay.
So, so back then, he really kind of pushed my aunts and my uncles to study. And my eldest aunt was the first aunt, was the first lady to graduate out of the Rajasthan University.
Wow.
And later on, she went and she made a name for herself and she won a Padma Bhushan in what is now called Gadya Kavya, which is prose poetry in Hindi.
Okay.
So, you know, the family was very deeply entrenched in these cultural, literary kind of influences that we grew up with. My father was also a man of very fine sensibilities. So I think while we were growing up, we were surrounded by all of this. Art seemed to happen as a natural thing to us. My grandfather was a collector. My dad started collecting very early in the day as well. So while we were in Agra, Agra was a very closed and a very small society. And I'm talking of the early 70s, if I may say. So maybe even earlier, because my sisters are older than me. So we grew up in a very, what is the right word to use? We grew up in a very, in a society which was very narrow-minded. But our parents and their outlook, because of how they were brought up, it seemed like we didn't belong there. It seemed like our parents had this totally different view towards life and how the girl child needs to be brought up, etc. So we never felt like we belonged to that small little world that Agra had kind of set out for us. We all, formative years, when I say we all, I use the plural because we were three girls and all of us passed out from CJM Agra. It was the first convent that was ever made in Agra. So apparently the nuns first landed in Agra and we completed 100 years when I was passing out in the 12th. So we had a very interesting run. When I say we had a very interesting run, we were more evolved than people around us. The exposure levels were immense. Yet our upbringing was very humble. I think what is most important is to be rooted and grounded well. So we had a full family, a happy family, as so to speak of. But we were taught the basic ground rules very well. The do's and don'ts and principles of life, while as we grew older in life, obviously it was our decisions. They were all our decisions to take and make. But we were very grounded. Our education was very grounded. Our upbringing was very grounded while having the world's exposure. At that time, when I say world's exposure, we grew up around art. My grandfather, because of his position and being attached to the court of Mewar, had all of, a lot of, he used to patronize artists. So I'm just kind of going to tie in as to where it led me later in life and how and why. So I grew up around the finer things of life. I mean, I still remember when I was very, very young, my father told me and gifted me a Christine Dior pair of glasses because I used to have I was myopic and I had a very, very bad eyesight. So we were exposed to what people back in the day could only think of. So that was, and it's ironic because as I keep repeatedly saying, my growing up years in Agra was a very small city. Everybody knew everybody. There were all sorts of, I mean, I dare use the word, but all sorts of societal pressures.
I'm sure.
But we were brought up to be equal to the other gender. Our parents never thought it any different, and we never thought it any different. So when we passed out, we were the three of us, all three of my eldest, two of my elder sisters and me. We were all head girls, and we created history. And we were supposed to be the three bold girls and the Chaudhary sisters, as we were known of. My sisters have got into the Delhi University and got married very early in their age, I must say. But again, they were marriages out of their own will and choice. So what I saw in my growing up years was, and what I thought and I dreamt of always was, you have a fully, you have a life which is fully accomplished once you get married and you have kids. And you also, at that time, I think being financially independent wasn't that big a thing. I'm also talking of 30, 40 years ago. You always had the comfort of your parents and, the protection of your parents, if I dare use the word. So I saw my sisters get married, but by the by, they also got into professions when they realized that now they had time and they'd kind of brought up the kids to a age where they could give that kind of time. Each of my sisters, they followed their own passion and they did what they wanted to do. So yes, pretty much that is what I saw of initially. And even I came to the Delhi University and I did English literature later. When I was studying, I realized I wasn't cut out to do any of the stereotypical things that were associated with literature. So I started dabbling with a lot of other things as I went along.
All right. So yeah, actually, your upbringing does play a critical role because, I mean, I think a child is like a sponge absorbing everything that they see around. It's not only what the parents tell them, but even what they observe, and that is what they imbibe. So yeah, I guess your creativity has its roots in the way you were raised.
Yes, it surely does, and we saw so much of art around us. We saw so much of sculpture around us. The finer things of life, I won't say specifically say art. I remember my father used to have a job in which made him tour a lot. He would take us in our summer vacations, and he would try to take us to museums. He would try to take us to people who sculpted marble to tell us the good from the bad of his understanding. So he was also very, very evolved as a person when it came to the finer things of life. I think somewhere when you see all of this and it becomes a part and parcel of your life, you really don't sit out and think of it being any different.
I agree.
It just becomes you as a person. So
Absolutely.
when I started on my career path, and I must say that I changed quite a few till I found my calling. Everything that I did was related to luxury, to lifestyle, to find the finer nuances that people could probably look at, whether it was dabbling in silver or it was doing. I had my own label, and I with a partner and a friend, and we used to create garments, Indo Westerns and stuff. However, these were all very short-lived, and then as the story goes, and I think in the podcast I'm going to talk about it as to how we decided to kind of start in a gallery. And I think everything was just building towards it. So
Yeah.
all these were life experiences that I was going through, and I probably knew that it was being directed in this direction. And it's been 8 years out. 2016, yes, is when we started the gallery. So it's been a while now.
All right. So tell me, as a child, did you have any aspirations or any dreams in particular which you thought you would, achieve later in life?
Yeah, sure. I think everyone does grow up with aspirations and dreams. And I had sisters who were achievers. My elder sister was a state level orator, and she used to participate in all these debates and dramatics. And the middle one was a state level table tennis champion. And I was good at neither. So, being the youngest, either you shy away or you excel. So I think my mechanism was, I'm not going to go down this route because this sister excels at it, and I don't want to be pitched against her, and I don't want to be pitched against this one. But while I was studying, I realized I had this great love for biology and medicine. And this is a funny story because now it's become a story. And I was preparing for my entrances. This is typically in your 12th, you start studying for your entrances and stuff. And one day my dad walked up to me and said, "But why are you studying for medicine?" I said, "Because, Dad, I want to give my entrance. I know it's going to be a long haul if I make it, but I want to see if I can." And my father, being my father and being so liberal minded as well at the same time, he told me, "So, honey, you do what you want to do, but if I find the first right man when you're in first year of college, wherever you are, whether you're studying medicine or wherever you are, I think I'm going to ask you to tie the knot and get married." So that made me think. That made me think, and I think also the lazy bit of me said, "Oh, 8 years, that's a lot of rigorous hard work, and it's going to, you hit your 40s, and that's the time you become a successful doctor, surgeon, whatever you plan to follow." So I said, "Okay, then maybe not." And I dropped my preparation, and I told my father, I said, "I'm going to apply to the DU, and I wanted English. I wanted to do English honors. So I made it through JMC, and the rest is history." So yes, my aspirations were to, as everybody's at that age, to be married, to have kids, also to have a career at some point. But weighing and seeing what, I think I was too young and too naive at that time to realize that it takes a balance between a personal and professional life, to be very honest. But life had different plans for me.
Well, as
And here,
it always
yes.
does, I think. All right. So just tell us a little bit about what you do currently. I mean, your art and your gallery. I mean, what exactly do you do?
So while I'm going to track back a couple of years, my sister's son. So as you see, we're a close-knit family. And I think that also makes a lot of difference. I keep referring back to my parents and my sisters because they've played a pivotal role in where I am today and how they've supported me through my journey, because I pretty much have been the rebel of the family in every which ways, and managed to get away with everything as well because I was the youngest. Yeah. And they stood by me. So my nephew comes back after graduating from Singapore. Okay. This is my middle sister's son. He says, in Hindi we say Mossi. So they refer to me as Mossi. And he said, I have flipped burgers and I've saved very little money. I want to go and procure some art, but I want to procure art as an asset class. Okay. So I just don't want to go and buy anything that I fancy or anything that looks pretty, but I want to invest that money in art.
Okay.
That was a very deep thought for a 22-some-year-old, boy coming back. And at that time, all that they're thinking of is how can they get themselves their Nike shoes and their fancy watches. So we said, okay. And we started doing the rounds of the galleries in Delhi. And there were galleries, there still are galleries, who work with contemporary younger mid-career artists. But it so happened at that time that the corpus my nephew was looking at investing was minuscule as compared to what we were seeing out at the galleries. Oh. So that got the both of us to think, especially me. And we came back and we said, you know what? It was very encouraging to see a 23-year-old boy come up and think of art as an asset class. To think of art as an investment.
Yeah.
To it got me thinking that there would be so much of the youth today who could actually be thinking of art as an asset class. And we all know of the masters. We've all heard the bigger names. We all know that Razas and Husseins and Sousas today are great investments, etc., etc. Yeah, but that needs a pretty deep pocket. Yes. And that needs, I would also say, a 23, 24-year-old, it's almost unaffordable unless it's your parents who are getting it for you. So that is when we came by the idea of working with younger and mid-career talent and trying to put them out and for a collector who's much younger as well. So when we initially started Art Explore, we were experimenting on the online platform. We did not have a physical space. We had signed up over 100 odd artists, and they were all in their initial first few years of their career, okay. which made it relatively more affordable for a younger collector. Yes. So the premise that Art Explore was set up and was the idea was born was to provide art to a younger collector who looks at art as an asset class.
Okay. So great. And I totally agree with you that for somebody as young as, 23 to think of this as an asset class, yes, commendable. But I guess this is again your genes. You know, he also inherited some of those. So definitely that has to do with that. Okay.
So he and I partner in Art Explore. Okay. He's the silent partner. I'm the face of it, I mean. Since the idea was born between the both of us, we came together to create Art Explore. And now, as we went along, we also realized that India at that time didn't have much of an appetite for people to buy art online. So when you're looking at a decorative piece, when you're looking at a certain price point, things have changed from then to now. I'm also talking of a journey of 6-7 years. But when we started, people weren't very happy buying art online. So this whole thing of the physical look and feel, I think we've all moved from there, whether it's garments or it's anything that you buy online, even for that matter, groceries. We've all made that shift in our life of being able to accept an e-com platform for everything which we did physically back in the day. So that shift also we saw. But however, then we realized that we needed a physical space. Yeah. So we opened up a gallery in Hoskas Village. Yes, I had that. We had that place for I think over 3-4 years, and then we moved to a much larger place in Panjshir Park. So currently, I have a 3,500 square foot place in Panjshir Park. We work with mid-career and younger talent, and we work with them. Tile and totally like it's crazy because the whole mentoring process from where we sign them up and till where we can show them. And when we show them at platforms like the India Art Fair and Art Mumbai. Now we are yet to take them abroad, but we hope to take them to Art Basel and Frieze one day. It's very, very interesting to see that move and that accept. You know, it takes people because it's very easy to recognize or remember a name which you have heard over and over and over and over again. I'm not only talking in the art field. I'm talking across. So say whether it's a Bill Gates, we know we've heard the name. Say it's a Picasso, we've heard the name. It's a Shah Rukh Khan, we've heard the name. So these are names which have a recall. What we try to do is we try to create that recall for all the artists we work with and for. We represent them, yes. We have a very, very strict process as to which we decide on who we want to work with and who we don't. Because if I'm putting myself out there for an artist and backing an artist, I need to be very, very sure about the person I'm working with.
So tell me, I mean, of course, you started this something which was, I think, new in that sense and a big challenge. You know, to try something like this, and especially art, which, you know, involves such a lot of investment. So you must have faced challenges along the way. So could you elaborate on some of those? And also if you faced challenges because of your gender?
Yeah, sure. So like in any other profession, when you are starting afresh, when it is a new venture, it could be any field. It could be the field of publishing. It could be the field of photography. Any field, you name it. If you are not short with challenges, I think you're the luckiest person alive. So, yes, I started Art Explore in a space where art and galleries were being run either by people who had been there eons ago, second generation taking over, or galleries which came into existence maybe some 30 odd years ago, etc., etc. So it was a little difficult for me to break into that space because till you don't build a certain amount of credibility in the art market and the art fraternity, it is definitely not an easy place, which means I have artists who are dependent on me for their livelihood. I need to keep the ball rolling for them. Investments do go down quite a bit. Since you do not come from the fraternity and you are trying to foray into a space which is largely new for you, there is a little bit of underlying pushback that you get from various agencies, you know, but what really pays off is persistence. Yes. You need to be very sure of what you want to do. You need to have a vision which is as clear as can be. Nothing should matter but the path you want to take. So while there are, you know, there are times where everyone gets waylaid, I get waylaid, and, you know, you're going through a little bit of a not great month, and you're sitting and you're contemplating, okay, maybe we should start doing things which are more pleasing to the people. But you know what? You need to stick to the vision you have. Art Explore has found acceptability and credibility only because it has stuck to its vision. We put out artists there with the conviction that every artist we work with will be an asset value and an asset class for you for tomorrow. So you invest in them young, you invest in them today, they could be the bigger names of tomorrow.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
So yes, I think challenges galore, but now we've way crossed that way. Space.
Great. Okay. And anything because of your gender? Or you don't think so?
No, surprisingly not, because art primarily is ruled, not rule is the wrong word, but almost all the galleries that you can think of are women.
We have
women on the forefront in this space and sector for the most part of it. So no challenges there, no gender related challenges at all. Yeah.
Okay, so of course, as a young woman, you of course, forged your path and you did what you wanted to do. And now you are in that space where you can offer some piece of advice to young girls, you know, who are on the threshold of their careers, their professional, personal lives. What do you think are some of the things that they should keep in mind? You know, certain do's and maybe don'ts, which, you know, as your life progresses, you know, you should keep in mind.
Yeah, so I feel the most important thing for anybody who is on their threshold of their professional life is be true to yourself.
Yes.
You need to be true to yourself. Yes. Center your energies. You will find detractors. You may change courses. You may change paths. But if you are true to yourself and as a person, every hurdle will be overcome. I mean, this is very philosophical, etc., if you kind of think of it. But I truly believe in this. I have changed a lot of career paths. But what helped me was being true to myself. I knew that this would lead me somewhere else. This is not working. I've given it my 100%. Yeah. Time to move on. Time to move on to try different things and not sit back and say, hey, no. So if you were honest and true to yourself as a person, you will never be rattled by the world around you, which means also clarity of thought. Absolutely. Does not always translate into the right professional decisions. Mm-hmm. A lot of people end up due to societal pressures or family pressures, doing things they don't like. Or, you know, and a couple of years down the road, they feel, I'm getting stifled in this and I want to move on. And yeah, but if you're true to yourself, you will find that path as well. Yeah. So for me, be honest and be true to yourself. Nothing else matters. The only person who is going to weigh the success or the failure of your life or your achievements is you. Do not give that power to anybody else. Mm. Because again, this is a very relative, subjective topic. Some people, and as kids, I think, you know, life's really changed. When we were growing up, life was very simple. Yeah. I remember growing up in a time where my options were science, history, or commerce.
Yes, yes.
Very clear, five subjects, this is what you choose from. And I also say, growing up in a smaller town, life was way simpler.
Yes.
We held on to the basics of life. We held on to what we were taught or thought to be gospel truths in whichever space or whatever we were doing. Right now, when I see kids growing up and the kind of influences, the kind of exposure they have, if you're not true to yourself, whether it's your professional path that you're going to foray on or it's your personal life that you're taking a next big step, you're probably, you know, planning to get married or something. If you are not true to yourself, there will be a gazillion people out there who will try to pull you down, who will try to tell you otherwise. So listen to everyone, but do what your heart says, because you know what is best for yourself.
Yes, I agree. I quite agree with you, because I think your gut never lies and your gut always tells you the truth. It is your choice whether you listen to it or not. It is always there. Yes. It is telling you something. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Okay. So as someone, of course, who has a career and who is, of course, you know, doing what she loves to do, but still, you know, there are days when one is down and out. You know, not every day is the same day. So how do you cope with the downs of your life?
So I think I'm very, very lucky, and I use the cliched word blessed, to be born in a family where everyone is of like a friend. My sisters, my parents, my mom. I lost my father through the Delta wave. My husband and the closest friends as well. So, you know, they are my sounding boards. They're people who I speak with and it is so natural to go into a low. There's a time when you feel, you know, your life's plateaued and nothing's moving and you're trying to work towards it. And, you know, you have a goal set in your mind and you're inching towards it rather than running towards it. That's the time. It's been my sisters, my husband, my mom, my closest friends who have been there for me. They've been my therapist. They've pulled me out of the dumps and they've told me, hey, time to get back on your feet. You're done with moping now. So, you know, I feel it's everyone should surround themselves with people who are positive. It could be family, as I'm saying. It could be your closest couple of friends. It could be your colleagues. I don't know which sphere, but surround yourself with people who understand you, because then you won't really need a therapist. You won't need to, feel like, oh my God, what's happening to my life?
Yeah, I
So
agree.
I've been very, very lucky to have a bunch of people around me who work as my sounding boards and have managed to really, really, if there's been a time and a situation in my life, they've been able to pull me out of it.
So, yeah, I guess we all need that positivity. Of course, it may be difficult to spot those people and have them around you, but yes, I think that is what is important and critical.
Sorry.
That's okay. Life has a way of teaching us things, knocking us down. And I guess when we don't learn something which it is trying to teach us, then it has a way of, teaching us by maybe some, through some harsh lessons. So any harsh lessons or any lessons that you have learned in life which you would like to share with the listeners?
Okay, so harsh not, but I will talk about a few experiences of my life which I think have been beautiful and have been very instrumental in shaping the way I think. I would not call them harsh because they haven't been, they haven't been harsh. So I say I'm a destiny's child. I believe a lot in destiny. In my younger days, I would think I had the power to change my life. I thought I was the doer. I always felt like, this is what I am doing. I need results. It is all about me, me. Not realizing that there is a larger power in play. I believe in it. You can agree to disagree. But I really believe that there is a larger power out there. You could call it a spiritual power. You could call it energy. That you could call it destiny. I call it destiny. I feel, I call it destiny. So I say there is this destiny at play. While we are doing what we do and know best to our best capacity and ability, what we think we do. Given the moment today, I think this is what I'm doing the best right now. Destiny could have a different story altogether in store. So to cut the long story short, if I thought I had life charted out the way I thought I wanted it to be, I would have probably been married at the age of 22, 23 with at least 2-3 kids by now, and also some sort of a career. And I don't shy away from saying that I worked because I felt the need to work. I was not a extremely career driven person when I was younger. My career did not consume me. So had I had my way, I would have, as I'm saying, I would have been married then. Destiny had other plans for me. I married much later in my life. My career took over more than anything else. I got people around me who were totally supportive of everything that I did.
Uh-huh.
To cut the long story short, this is an interesting little bit that I love talking about as a life experience for me.
Okay.
It so happened that before I met my husband Samir, I used to take these girl trips, and I used to travel Europe twice a year. And I was the designated driver, and I used to travel with three of my closest buddies, in which one was my cousin always. We were four of us, and nobody would drive, and I was asked to go behind the wheels and drive. So I'm driving in Corsica, and so I'm going to cut it really, make it really short, because I can go on the story. I love it so much. Mm-hmm. But we pick up a car rental, and we go to the booth, and we say, okay, which route should we take? Because it was a 3-hour drive to our hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady puts us on a particular track. She says, you should go this route. Your GPS is going to show the other. Oh, all good and dandy. We take off on that route. It's a broken down road. One side is the valley. The other side is, It was crazy. I felt it was like a scene out of Jurassic Park. Middle of the day, 3 o'clock, there was thunder. It all became dark. Like literally, I mean, if I was a writer and I could write, I would write a book on that one episode of my life. And lo and behold, and you know how Indian girls travel, all of us had these big suitcases because we needed clothes. We don't know how to travel light. And I was driving this big van instead of these mini cars everyone was driving around. In Corsica, nobody drives bigger cars. And I was literally driving like this huge 5 series kind of a van. And I meet with an accident. So I'm driving and somebody swerves into me and I swerve the other side. And luckily it's the mountainside. So one, I've been very lucky not to be in any accident. So I was totally shell-shocked. And two, I realized it wasn't big. My tire just went over a little protruding boulder. So it kind of burst.
Okay.
Now, we're not used to all of these situations abroad. So we go helter-skelter, we're in France, nobody knows the language, it's pouring, it's become like literally dark and torrential downpour. So the damsel and me, I run out of the car and I start hailing cars down, somebody would come and help. And my three girlfriends are standing on one side and saying, but why would Reshma behave like this? Why can't we just get out and fix the tire on our own? I've never fixed a tire in my life, sorry, but I haven't. So anyhow, I tried to hail down a lot of cars. One gentleman came out and stopped his car and he came. And now the problem, he doesn't speak English. We don't speak French. We don't know what to do. So I show him the flat tire, and the next thing he does is he just shows me his hand saying, hang on, and he drives by.
Okay.
Then, yes, and it's still pitch dark and we haven't been able to find the jack to change the car tire and all of this. And I am freaking the hell out because it's a different country. You don't know the language. You don't know how far you are from your destination and it's dark.
Yeah.
It really felt like a scene out of Jurassic Park. Anyhow, nothing happens. We're still there. It's half an hour gone, 45 minutes gone. Nobody's stopped. I tried to hail down multiple cars after that. Nobody obliged. This gentleman comes back after an hour and a half or so. He doesn't understand the language. We are still parked there. And it's not even a shoulder because I couldn't really take the car off and pull over to a shoulder because of the flat. He tries to get a jack out of the car. Apparently, he went back to his village. He got a jack. He tried to fix the car tire, but he realized that he got the wrong jack. So he bamboozled again. He drove my car and he parked it at the shoulder. And he bamboozled again. And now again, we do not know because we can't converse. And really, I'm narrating this because when I came back to India after the entire episode got over, I realized there is a reason behind why everything happens. He came back with two strong men from his village who lifted our car, fixed our tire, and disappeared in thin air. We tried to track them down. We tried to find them so that we could leave a bottle of wine at least or some such as a token. Nothing of that sort because we didn't know where he came from. He came back thrice to help us. I'm getting goose flesh while I talk because, these are things which people normally write off as everyday occurrences.
I think
this was destiny in play. We were thrown off route. That wasn't the, because when I drove back, it was a great expressway which had a four-vehicle drive on one side. So I was thrown off route. I was meant to meet with that accident. That gentleman, out of the hundreds I must have tried to hail down, stopped because at some point in some time of his cycle of births and rebirths, he owed it to all the four of us or to one of us to come and do that for us and just disappear in thin air. I mean, think of it. And as I keep saying, I believe a lot in destiny. There is a reason why everything happens in life. And this, you need to be a little centered with your energies to understand it. I only touch it at the periphery, and this touches me at the periphery. I'm not a spiritual thinker or a reader or much of that. But I relate things to my everyday experiences. There was a reason everything happened in my life for the time duration it did. At that time, it could have hurt. When we were younger and things weren't falling into place, and we used to be wired and stressed and anxious and upset. But when I look back and I look back at my life, I say there was a reason why everything happened the way it happened.
agree.
So,
I agree.
So these are things which have really, and I can only say this in retrospect. If had I thought about thinking like this probably 20 years ago, I may not have had the clarity. I would have still be, but you know, we tend to question, but why me?
Yes,
why is it happening? If there's something which is not good by the book or by our standard, why me? I haven't done anything wrong. Why me?
That's the normal question.
Yeah, but if you do believe in a certain sort of karmic cycle, if you do believe a little bit in spirituality, you, because it was meant to be you, you were supposed to learn out of it. I was supposed to learn humility out of that situation. I couldn't think better but to run across and hail down cars, because I thought that was survival for me at that point. I mean, I'm over dramatizing it, but at that point, the only thoughts were, what if we have to spend the night in the car?
Yes,
what? Because it
a
possibility. Was dark.
Yeah, that could have been. Yeah,
we were all drenched to the skin. And then how that gentleman just came and helped and disappeared.
Divine.
Wanting nothing from us.
Divine.
So there is a reason. Yes, yes. So we learn from all of our experiences. And I think for me, I've started reading a lot into interactions and a lot into why something could have happened. What would the reason be? Was I meant to take away from it, or was the other person meant to take away from it?
Yeah. Yes, life has its way of teaching us things and, you know, showing us things and showing us perspective, you know, many times. So tell me, Reshma, you see around yourself, I also see women are, you know, making a success of most things that they do, making a name for themselves, fame, name, everything, you know. We are going and cracking it and getting it. So how is the world taking to this? I mean, when I talk about the world, I'm talking about both men and women. How do they react to a woman who's made it, who's done it all, who is successful in whatever she's set out to do?
Yeah, so I think the world is very used to women being successful now. Everyone and anyone that I think of, I look at it in my sphere, in my life, people I know, everyone's doing something which is big in their own space. So this whole thing of women being on top, men being on top in terms of career paths and growths is no longer prevalent, according to me, even as a topic of conversation. I just feel it's just normal, because your male counterpart also expects the same out of you as the other way around. I mean, there is no difference. If you choose to be a homemaker, then it is your choice.
Absolutely.
That is your,
yeah.
Yes, and you do it. And being a homemaker doesn't mean you're not working. I think it's the most taxing thing you can do.
It
but
is.
Women, definitely. I mean, when I was younger and I was doing different things, I used to be so proud. I used to go out and see that all the top marketing positions in spaces of lifestyle and luxury, there were women leading it.
Yeah.
And I used to just come back and I used to sit down at home and have a conversation at the dinner table saying, I just feel so proud when I go out and I see this. But this, I feel, has just now become a norm.
It's normal. I agree.
And it'll be very sad if someone doesn't or cannot support it. I think then they need to evolve as people.
True. I completely agree with that. Okay. So there is a trend which I've noticed, and I'm sure you've noticed that too, that a lot of people nowadays, when they reach their, you know, midlives, maybe even late 30s, early 40s or whatever, or even 50s for that matter, which I call, you know, maybe midlife rebooting, they think of doing things which are different and diverse from what they were doing earlier. I mean, they may have studied to become something and then they did that for a while. And now they have suddenly decided to do something diametrically opposite. So why do you think this is happening, and your views on it?
So that's a very interesting question. So here's my two bits. When we started talking in this conversation, I did mention that a lot of people, women especially, did a lot of things or chose a lot of career paths because of parental or societal pressure.
Yes.
And they pursued it. And, they, you know, so it you become habitual also of doing certain things day in and out. I feel it's like a auto programming that goes on. So you are you studied a certain space or a certain field, and you know that you this is the maybe you take up a job or you start your own work or whatever it is. And at some point when you've given it enough time and you've given it enough hours, manpower, man hours, and you've realized, and now there are no societal pressures, because when you hit your mid 40s, your 50s, your kids have grown up pretty much for most of everyone. Your, you know, responsibility set, in the way we call it is, has eased up. You're not, you know, your kids are on their own, career paths or they're studying or whatever. That's the time that you probably sit back and say, hey, maybe now I should do what I really think I've wanted to do all my life. Yeah. Maybe now is the time that I want to pursue my passions.
Yes.
Maybe now is the time I just want to experiment. I'm so done with doing what I've been doing for the last 40 years, 30 years. Maybe I just want to experiment and see. So you've also come into some sort of stability financially. You've spent, for the most part of it, I mean... The other opposite extreme could be, I've been working, I've been trying, nothing's worked out. Maybe now I need to change course.
Yeah.
Which is also okay. Let's look at both. Why are we only looking at the most glorified part of how it can be?
True. Yeah. And I think there is a lot of not only flexibility in thinking, but acceptance also when it comes to society, and people are more open about it. You know, yes, we're okay to experiment. Maybe earlier days, this openness wasn't there. And I also feel that because of social media and so much exposure which people have nowadays, you know, there are tons of things happening around. So you do get ideas, you do get inspiration. And I think somewhere then
definitely.
Feel, yeah.
Why not? Yes. Yeah. Why not try?
Yeah. Okay. So women conventionally, traditionally have to juggle different roles, different balls in their lives. I don't say that men don't have to, but somewhere women have to do more, because I think as a society, we expect more from women in terms of whether it is family or it is parents or social obligations. It's always largely the women who have to do it. So any particular way that you have figured out, or any mantra that you have of being able to juggle different balls that you have to?
So I think it wasn't so tough for me. One, I married very late. Mm-hmm. So when I got married, there was this clear understanding of responsibility set that came with the marriage, with being a part of your in-laws family, with being a part of your parental side as well, your mm-hmm. career, what was most important, how do you manage it, what were the so-called expectations from you. We don't have kids. So I think on that front, you know, it eases up a little bit of the pressure on the both of us. But otherwise, I think women just inherently know how to juggle different balls. Mm-hmm. It's they do it effortlessly. I saw my mom do it. I've been seeing my friends' parents do it. It is effortless. Bringing up kids, looking after the house, family, et cetera, et cetera. But my only question is, now you take the same family out of a setting which is India and take them to the US. Or take them abroad anywhere. Do you see the kind of contribution that the male partner also does? It doesn't only become a woman's role then to bring up the kids single-handedly, or to, you know, juggle between career, home, kids, et cetera, and a social life. Why can't men imbibe that part and bring it back to India? While I see a lot of change happening right now, Sangeeta, because I'm at a phase in my life where my nieces and my nephews are married, and I'm seeing that, and I'm seeing that change come about. But I think that change has come about because they've seen their parents change.
Yes, I agree.
So I only think it's a matter of time where everything will be balanced. Right now, yes, we wear the crown. We know how to deal with it and manage everything brilliantly well, I dare say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though I still feel that even out there, yes, women do tend to kind of, you know, they still have more responsibilities, and still maybe because, like you said, we are inherently more capable, if I may say so. Or we are built that way, wired that way, that
we
easily know how to multitask, which somewhere men fall short of. Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
Okay. So where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
I hope with an international presence, Art Explore going international and a few more galleries in India,
Wow.
with my artists reaching where I have, where we have planned them to see, where we want to see them. So growing by leaps and bounds, we're working towards it. The rest is all left up to destiny.
Destiny, yes, but all the best. And I firmly believe that if you manifest something, you do get it.
Yes.
And you get it when you're supposed to get it.
You get it when you're supposed to get it. So bide your time. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. All right. So finally, Reshma, can a woman have it all?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. There are no two ways about it. I think women have it all. It's not a question again. They already have it. They know how to manage. See, we're also talking about maybe the 10% that we see around us and the kind we see around us. Now, if I go down to tier two, tier three, I may not be the right person to answer this question because the dynamics change, the societal dynamics change over there. But we're talking about what we see around us. Definitely women have it all.
All right. Okay, so thank you so much. It was indeed wonderful talking to you. And it's always good to get different perspectives and, you know, different viewpoints. Though, if I may dare say, I just feel that no matter where we all come from in terms of our backgrounds, educational backgrounds, otherwise cultural, societal, most women, or rather, if I may say so, all women, you know, at the core are the same. Face similar kind of challenges, similar kind of, you know, difficulties, uncertainties. And I think that is where we all bond also, because we're able to understand the other person, the other woman, more than a man can ever hope to. So really nice having you. And I hope you enjoyed being on the show as much as we did having you. So thank you so much.
It was absolutely a pleasure. It was lovely just talking to you. And I hope this continues, and I hope your podcast, it grows by leaps and bounds.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Tune in every Thursday for some more inspiring conversations with women trailblazers. If you like the show, follow us, and you could leave a review to help us get better. You could even get in touch with us on any one of our social media handles.